Now in open session, do we have consensus on the order of business?
Yes.
Mr. Spadafore?
Yes.
Mr. Spadafore has consensus on the order of business.
I'm consensus.
Everyone, okay.
I'm in.
You were in agreement. Okay. Approval of the minutes.
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes of July 14th as set forth.
Okay, I'll second that motion.
And I will be abstaining from the minutes of July 14th.
Thank you.
I had just one question. Miss Wendy, is that the same as Wendy Went? August 10th, the first page. Annual workshop. Oh, I'm sorry. I'll wait. Thank you, ma'am. Okay.
Okay, we have a motion and a second for the minutes of July 14th. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That passes unanimously with the abstention of Mr. Unger. The minutes of August 10th.
I'll move approval.
Isn't that her name, Wendy Went?
Just what it's in there is Mrs. Wendy.
Oh, okay. So with that notation, those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? That passes unanimously. At the time the agenda was prepared, the board had received no correspondence. And Mr. Millar informs me that he has received no written requests to address the board. Is there anyone present who would like to address the board during the public comment session? Okay, seeing no one, we will move on to reports by school staff and administrators. Okay, seeing no reports, we'll move on to Educational Services Division update.
Yes, Madam President, I'm very happy to have the opportunity to share with you and the board a brief update from the educational side of the house. Last week, we welcomed back our administrative team and held 2 days of back-to-school meetings. So we're all fired up and ready to go to open school in a week or so. I'm happy to report that we're able to provide professional development in the area of our mathematics adoption to our K-6 through Algebra 2 teachers. And we're looking forward to having them prepared to implement that new adoption. And thank you for supporting us in the purchase of those materials. Also this summer, I'm happy to report that our PEG agreement was accepted by both students at all the other schools in our district. So we'll look forward to having our students' work posted on Channel 20 in the near future. In another area, at the elementary music level, our elementary music teachers have recommended to our elementary principals that we take a look at our sixth grade music program and provide an option which allows our students to either select choral music or band as their music program for the year. Baywood School, Monarch Grove, and Los Ranchos schools have opted to try this approach. Elenio is the lead elementary music specialist providing this program. It's our hope that with our sixth grade students selecting an option of their choice, that they will be able to develop their music ability, and that could translate in their further selections at the secondary level. So we'll let you know how that program goes as it gets implemented. I'd also like to thank Brad Parker and his staff for putting the finishing touches on our preschool program facilities at C.L. Smith. Brad reported today that things are good to go, and now the staff is settling in, and we look forward to delivering our preschool program to the students and families at C.L. Smith. And thank you, Amy, for making that happen this summer. A lot of reorganization of that school campus, and you've really made that work. We also were notified today that we've been approved for our federal homeless grant, which you supported at the end of last year.
Okay, Seeing none then, we'll move to Mr. Miller and the status of the state budget.
Thank you. In our absence of the last 4 weeks or so, the state has completed a budget and passed it. The impact on San Luis Coastal Unified School District is that in the 09-10, we will pay a fair share of pain based upon $250 per student, translates to $1.7 million, and we will pay it through categorical program reductions. Methodology yet to be determined, but it's suspected that we'll get a list of all the categorical programs and we'll mark the ones that we want them to hold on to. So it's based on 08-09 monies, and it's going to be paid in 09-10. It's a methodology the state adopted in order to circumvent the Prop 98 deadline that they missed, and it will cause the floor of Prop 98 to lower as it comes into 09-10. The additional cuts will be visited on San Luis Coastal in 2010-11 based on 09-10 calculations. The calculation essentially is about $2.7 million, $2.5 million, somewhere in there. Methodology yet to be determined, but it's suspected it's going to be the same list of categorical programs. We'll tell them to keep their money. So those are the substantive results for us based upon the budget that was passed several weeks ago. The current legislature, who has filed a lawsuit against Arnold Schwarzenegger, and he maintains that Arnold used his line item veto improperly in order to cut $900 million worth of program expenditures, and they're asking that those be restored. The suit's been filed. We'll see where it goes, and eventually it could have an impact. If Steinberg's lawsuit is successful, it definitely will have an impact on the state budget. The current numbers of estimates of revenues and expenditures at the state level came out for the month of July. The income taxes were below estimates, the sales taxes were below estimates, but corporate income taxes were above estimates to the amount almost of what the other two items were below. Really? So it was a zero impact at the state level right now. There's an analysis going on of the future liabilities that are going to be required for the state to fund over the next 30 years, and they exceed $90 billion. I'm sorry, the number gets to be progressive. So $90 billion shortfall in cash in order to handle their liabilities, and one of Arnold's big pushes of the last 2 days has been to redefine the retirement systems of PERS and STERS and go back to the year 2000 and the limits that were available to employees retiring at that time. It has a large price tag of savings attached to it, should they be successful, or payments back to the state for our fair share is going to occur December, January, as the income tax information, the sales tax, as the annual information is analyzed at a six-month level, the state is likely to find itself in another rather large deficit position, which will require education to do additional cuts.
Okay. Russell, I just got lost for a moment there. When you're giving us the figures for 09-10,
uh-huh.
I wrote down $2.5 million. I don't think that's right.
That's close enough, yeah.
That's close enough.
Yeah.
And that's payable in 10-11?
Yes, that's correct. It was a very unusual and unexpected twist that they're going to have us make our cuts or pay our cuts 1 year after we're supposed to make them. It's very good for us because it gives us a whole extra year to plan out. But it was unlooked for, and I'm not sure where it came from. So as the trailer bills come, as things become defined, we're going to get a little bit better definition of what the intent and the actual outcome is going to be. But we'll keep you up to date on it.
Okay, thank you very much. The next item is a resolution. Let's see. Turn your mic on.
Thank you. I'll make a motion to approve resolution number 010910.
Second.
Okay. So, resolution.
Do you want to talk?
Mr. Miller.
Thank you. This is an annual event at the beginning of every year that we ask for the delegation of signature authority. At this time, we're asking for Julie Lang, Director of Fiscal Services, Mary Matakovich, Assistant Superintendent, myself, Assistant Superintendent, Rick Robinette, Director of Personnel, Ed Valentine, as Superintendent, to be able to sign legal documents and checks for the district.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second. It's a roll call vote. Mrs. Holmes?
Mr. Spadafore?
Yes.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Mr. Angel?
Yes.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Mr. Millar?
Aye.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers? Passes 7-0.
Okay, then moving on to the action discussion portion of the agenda, we have item 5, declaration of need for fully qualified educators. Mr. Robinette?
The board is probably aware and has seen this form before. Every year, about this time of year, we come and ask for sometimes a handful of either emergency permits, limited term or limited assignment permits, or internship credentials. It's a little unusual this year in that we are actually asking the Commission on Teacher Credentialing for the potential need for up to 100 emergency permits for teachers not having the CLAD credential. As the board is aware, we identified in the last year and a half about 140 or so teachers who were yet to be certified for working with EL students, for teaching EL students. And we've been making a pretty concerted effort, putting a lot of district resource and time into that. We believe who are needing to take the test perhaps in December or taking coursework. And the Commission on Teacher Credentialing requires us to ask for those emergency permits before we were to get them. So it's a pretty liberal estimate of 100. I don't think we're going to be needing to ask for that many, but we want to be safe. So I'm here to answer any other questions you might have about this or anything regarding that.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers?
Thank you, Rick. Can you just explain how often and where the CTEL test is given, the courses are given, rather, and also you mentioned reimbursement. How much do the teachers have to pay?
Sure. The CTEL test, which is the primary way that people get certified who have been teaching for some time. All teachers coming into the profession now, it's part of their credentialing program, but veteran teachers, the CTEL test is given twice a year. It's in June and December, and the testing centers are fairly far away. I think Fresno, Bakersfield, and somewhere in the L.A. area, is it? You know? Yeah, L.A. And so it's on a Saturday. It's pretty much a full-day test. There are three components to the test. Teachers must pass all three in order to be certified. If they pass one or two, they can go back and take those other ones, or they can choose to take just one or two at a time. But it's only offered twice a year. The district is providing classes and training in order to prepare for that test. Teachers have been able to do that either in summer workshops or after school workshops. The county has provided some weekend opportunities, and a ton of our staff has signed up for those. We have a whole series of workshops that our instructional services department way, which is to complete CTEL approved or CLAD approved coursework, and so and that's quite expensive to some of the universities and places offering that. The district is reimbursing for both the travel time to the test site and the actual test fees upon passing scores. We're looking for passing scores, and then also providing the training.
Mr. Buckman?
Thank you, Madam President. I think I have two questions. You want to? I'll give them one at a time, okay. It's my understanding that some districts have actually been found out of compliance on this. Will this declaration help us stay compliant?
Yeah, I fully expect that we will be found out of compliance, and that's one of the reasons we're asking for the emergency permits. We are expecting a credential audit this year from the county, and when they come and audit our all of our credentials, they audit every teacher is part of the audit, and they will determine this person is teaching a class with EL students and needs to have an emergency permit. It's at that point that we will require the teacher to have the emergency permit. Part of it is we don't know where our EL students are scheduled yet. A person could ostensibly be teaching a class, especially at the elementary level in some of our classes, where they don't have any EL students and they don't have to have this credential. We want all of our teachers to have our credential. We want access for students to be with any teacher in the school district. So until we get that credential audit, we won't be applying for these emergency permits, but we're expecting it, and we'll expect the need to apply for a large number of them.
Madam President?
Yes.
Okay. And in some neighboring districts, when they were forced to go to layoffs, this became an issue. And
competency and skipping criteria. And a very common criteria is the ability to teach EL students as a skipping criteria. In other words, a less senior teacher who has this authorization being able to keep a job over a more senior employee who doesn't. So that is common.
Thanks.
Mr. Angel.
Do we have to notify parents if a student is in a class of a teacher who doesn't have this credential?
No, it's an interesting thing. We have to notify under the No Child Left Behind laws any person who is not NCLB qualified in a Title I school. And all of our teachers are NCLB qualified in our Title I schools. So the feds don't care about the EL stuff that much. The state cares about the EL stuff. So we don't have any notification requirements for the CLAD credential. We do for NCLB.
Rick, have we been, it's been several years that we've known that the state was requiring this. Are we aggressively pursuing having all of our teachers participate and get certified?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think our teachers are on notice and aware, and I think one of the kind of unfortunate things, this is no new law. We've had this for a long time, but I think there's finally teeth in it. There are districts and organizations where people are going into unpaid status if they don't have the credential, and that will happen to us. And so I think our Teachers Association has been very cooperative. We've taken very concerted efforts, and it's our goal that by July 2010 we have this all done. I'm not sure we'll realize that goal, but we're going to be close. And I, you know, when we hire people.
And seconded by Mr. Buckman. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes unanimously. Item 6. Approval of C.L. Smith Elementary School's Comprehensive Title I School-Wide Program Plan. Mrs. Dalkiskamp.
Okay. Good evening. With this item, staff is seeking the review and subsequently the approval of C.L. Smith's Title I School-Wide Program Plan. Your approval of this plan will result in a more coordinated use of Title I funds and a decrease in the amount of documentation required by state and federal regulations. Principal Amy Shields and the members of her school community have developed the required plan, and Amy is here this evening to share some of the highlights of the process and of the plan.
Good evening, everybody.
Good evening.
In order to operate a school-wide Title I program at C.L. Smith, we had to meet some specific requirements. First of all, at least 40% of our students enrolled must be from low-income families. This is determined by the number of students eligible for free and reduced lunch. We met that criteria during the 2008-2009 school year. The second requirement is that we develop a comprehensive school-wide program. It's not all that different than the single plan for student achievement that we develop every year, but it allowed us an opportunity to really take an in-depth look before we came up with our new plan. To do this, we included a variety of data studies, including looking at our student achievement data, of course, the disaggregated data that we were obtaining from our parents from our yearly parent survey. From here, we looked at all of our results. You have a copy of the results in your packet with you tonight, and then our school site council made recommendations, which we then added into our school plan. I thought I would highlight just a few of those. If you go to the recommendations, which on mine are at least page 14, many of the things were, we want to continue this, we want to keep this in place, we want to add to, we want to build programs that we already had started. But a few things we're going to be looking at differently. We want to pilot next year the use of the Comprehensive Literacy Model Spelling Program for K-2 students based on the Science of Spelling, a book study that we did last year. All our teachers this year will be developing measurable goals to increase our English learners' students' performance in reading. In the area of mathematics, we want to look at our interventions. Currently, we have both before school and after school interventions in mathematics. We're going to look at a push-in model where we actually bring an additional teacher into our first and second grade classrooms to lower the class size during math instruction and really help bring up the levels of students who need that extra support right there in the classroom. In the area of wellness, we have a great opportunity coming to us this year at Seal Smith, and we hope to provide additional opportunities for students to provide community service in our parent participation preschool as well as in our Peep Stars program. And in the area of parent involvement, something new we're going to be doing, you may or may not know that I'm bilingual. I'm not always in the office, and when I'm not in the office and parents come in that need someone that speaks Spanish, it's a little bit, I'd be happy to answer any questions and hope you will support this.
Mr. Buckman.
Thank you, Madam President. I don't know if it's for Reed or Amy, but you said that it would be easier to coordinate and less paperwork with this application. I think there's another component that I heard about, and that was the participation of all the students at the school. Can you just fill us in a little bit?
Sure. Currently, as a targeted assistance program, funds must be directed only to students who are identified for Title I. And every once in a while, you might have one or two or however many students who might also benefit from that service, but you're not able to provide it to them. Under a school-wide program, you have a little bit more flexibility. We're still targeting those services for our Title I population, but there's some flexibility there that we don't have to make sure when the teacher goes in the classroom they only work with Title I students. If other students approach them, they are able to without violating any of the regulations.
Thanks. It makes this more understandable.
Mrs. Delkiskamp, is that has Del Mar been a school-wide Title I for some time? Is that why I'm thinking that everyone who needs to benefits from what's available?
Yes, Del Mar and also Pacheco and Hawthorne are all school-wide programs. We'd like to add Smith and Monarch.
Success Time is a program that we have for our 4th through 6th graders, and by having all those teachers teach reading all of their language arts and mathematics at the same time, we're able to come up with a time, and it's a half an hour time a day, where we look at who needs what, and rather than having children come for an after-school intervention, because most of those kids that need interventions are already coming after school to get homework support, so we give the specific intervention in language arts during what's called success time. It's similar to the Del Mar Walk to Learn program, but this is targeted in specifically for 4th through 6th grade. And kids at that time go to various classrooms. Our resource teacher is available and does an intervention, so she's actually working with non-identified students at that time. For kids that go to speech therapy, they get it during success time. And so they're not having to leave social studies or science. So a lot is happening during that time. For kids that don't need an intervention and are back in the classroom, they're getting language arts enrichment at that time with the regular ed classroom teacher. So it's a win-win for everybody. And it's what we call sacred time. Nothing happens. There are no assemblies. There are no fire drills. It's all about success. I'm glad you asked about that.
And how does that compare to the sheltered program? How is that different or similar to the sheltered English language learner program?
You want to answer that?
Thank you.
Very different.
Okay.
Well, I guess I would ask Amy if during that time, during that language arts time, is the EL specialist working with fourth and fifth and sixth?
Thank you for clarifying for me. Our ELD teacher does work during that time. She is, you know, by grade level, but with our EL kids, that during our success time, we chose to use our EL specialist to work with our higher level EL students in fifth and sixth grade. So she was pulling out a group of level threes and fours, kids that were really well on their way to, you know, being English literate, and worked with them 4 days a week. Whereas students who were at lower levels, levels one and two, were seen by her during a different time. So it did include the EL program, but for our higher children.
Great, thank you. That's great.
Okay, Mr. Buckman.
Oh, I think you get.
I'm just going to, I don't know how it happened, so I'm just going to work my way down.
Okay, thank you, Madam President. One of the things that jumped out at me in this application was something called the intervention wall, and I didn't know that was something laid, put the kids up against and targeted them or put it up.
Yeah. Let me talk a little bit about the intervention wall. I have to give credit where credit is due. The intervention wall came to us and to our district from Mary Zerm, our reading recovery specialist. She went to many, obviously she goes to lots of ongoing training and brought this idea back. It's been now 3 years ago, and she first targeted it at C.L. Smith 3 years ago and did an intervention wall of our first graders only. And basically what we do, we have a little card for each child in first grade, and we put up this wall, and the wall is made up of pocket charts. And, you know, on the left side of the wall is far below basic, and you move all the way up to advanced. The goal is to get everybody moving towards advanced. We took that and then have, you know, gone with that. And now last year was our first year of doing the intervention wall for all students in regular education, K-6, December. And the goal is to be able to move kids across the wall. You know, we also, there'll be various little stickers on each one of these that'll show you clearly what the interventions are. Excuse me, that the child is receiving. So if you were to see a child over in the basic or below basic category, there better be some stickers that show that child's getting something. And if there isn't, well, let's turn that card around. What's going on? What can we be doing more for this child by name? So it really does individualize it for us.
Thanks. And I think for me, one of the things was this is not something that's on a computer and you can ignore it. Every time they walk into the conference room, it's right in their face. So it seemed really interesting.
Something to see.
Yeah. Dr. Skoulas shared his intervention wall with me last year. Mm-hmm. I believe it was last year, maybe the year before. I think it was last year. And it is really a huge visual impact. The magnitude of the work that is in progress is very exciting.
Yeah.
Mr. Millar.
Thank you. I just had a question about some of the data on SMART goals results 0708. For me, it's 6.8. Where there's a lot of fluctuations, say, in 1C for grade 4, is that a function of just the number in the cohort or, you know, or the luck of the draw that particular year?
Well, if I may, without even looking specifically at the data, a very intelligent superintendent once taught me that your year-to-year goals are your year-to-year, you know, results, and what you see is what you see. And because we're always disappointed when we see scores go down. We're thrilled at the ones that go up. We get disappointed when we see them go down. It's important for you to look at that when you look across on those increase overall as we're moving up. Okay. We're not quite there in that, but it's I think, the bigger picture.
Okay.
Thank you.
And the other observation I'll make is I was struck by how similar the amount of SIP funds that you're getting at C.L. Smith, how close it is to the amount that you were getting about 14, 16 years ago when I was on site council.
You're right.
Hopefully you're still doing amazing things with it, but that's kind of shocking to see that it stayed so close.
It is a reality. Thank you.
Mr. Unger.
Yeah, it seems to me, Amy, that being able to be a school-wide Title I school will also help move you toward even greater application of the professional learning communities, and I'm really excited about that for you guys.
Thank you.
Mr. Angel.
Thank you. So I was very impressed by the whole site plan. There are, it seems like, a lot of interventions in place. Could you elaborate what marathon intervention is and then HOTS fans? I was curious.
I would be happy to. And, in fact, I'll send you a HOTS fan. We really do call them a HOTS fan. Marathon intervention is a meeting that we have in our conference room, and it lasts 2 days. And it's the members of the intervention team include both special ed and general ed staff, our resource teacher, the speech therapist, our student success team chairperson, the EL teacher, the Title I teacher, and myself. And we're there for 2 days, and then the grade level teams come in. So we get roving subs to cover the teachers, and the first group of teachers to come in are the kindergarten teachers, and they come in. And that might support that child. And when we get the whole grade up, and we don't do it by teacher, we do it by grade, because we want to take a look, you know, by grade, where is the greatest need, work our way up from the bottom up. Then that intervention team gets the interventions in place, we get a rolling, and then we meet again in December. By then, we've done post-assessments on the students who were getting the interventions. We look at, well, how did we do? Can we move some kids across that intervention wall that I mentioned earlier? Mm-hmm. Do we need to change up the intervention? Do we need to tweak it a little bit? Did this intervention not work for that child because they were sitting by that kid and didn't get along, and we better think of a better intervention? So it gets what I call the best of the best. I mean, the special ed and regular ed staff that really understand interventions and really get us thinking as a group think to provide for kids so that we can help them succeed. The second question, HOTS fans. HOTS fans is based on Bloom's taxonomy, and it stands for higher order thinking skills. And the HOTS fans are about this big, and it's a little fan. Literally, it has one of those little, what do you call those little things, brads in it. Uh-huh. And there's probably 30 little cards on it, and it'll have from lowest level retail questions all the way up to inferring questions. And it's a handy-dandy little thing that a teacher may have during a reading group to ask kids and make sure he or she is not just saying, you know, who ate the duck, who did this, but really how do you think he felt, and getting kids asking those higher level questions. With our upper grades, the students actually have the HOTS fans, and when they're in a small group, they could be asking each other those questions.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Sounds like great things.
Yeah. Mr. Spadafore.
Yeah, Rita, thank you. Scribe really are the effective means, and the description of the teacher data really supports the fact that the staff is well constituted to implement all this, so it's terrific. Thank you.
I'm pretty lucky to be there.
Yeah.
That's a great staff.
They're pretty lucky to have you there.
Thank you.
Mr. Millar.
Just one more quick one. Could you help me make sure I understand what disaggregated data means?
Well, I'm going to give you the Amy Shields version of it. Data is the whole school scored 60%. Disaggregated would be second grade scored this, third grade scored this. More disaggregated would be your second grade total population scored this, but your English learners scored this. Your students who come from low socioeconomic scored this. Your boys scored this, and girls scored this. We can go all the way, you know, down to the, and Walt Millar scored this.
Mr. Spadafore?
I would like to make a motion that the board accept the comprehensive Title I school-wide program plan as presented.
I'll second that.
Okay, that's moved by Mr. Spadafore, seconded by Mr. Angel. Oh, Dr. Valentine.
Just as a point, as we were talking about disaggregated data, one of the things that is being that we believe and is also being seen as more and more essential to drilling down and providing customized interventions to kids are data systems that are able to disaggregate.
Direction. This is Roger.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Unger.
Just I'd like to add to what Dr. Valentine said that I think is very interesting in what Mrs. Shields is talking about, and that is that my read is that there's oftentimes lots of data. And so the question is, what do you do with the data that you've got, and can you apply that data to actual classroom conditions and make use it to make things better for kids. And that sounds like that's something you're doing, and that's great.
Okay. Well, it can be either. Okay. Point of clarification is that this item was on the agenda this evening for discussion, but it was under action discussion, and if the board so chooses, it can take action tonight, and we have That's a motion correct. And a second to do so.
That is correct.
Okay. So we had a motion by Mr. Spadafore, second by Mr. Angel. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Passes unanimously.
Thank you.
Item 7, authorization to apply for California solar incentive rebates. Mr. Parker.
Good evening. Well, as we promised, we would return to the board once we'd done some more homework with the actual dollar values for the California Solar Initiative rebate program. As the board will recall, that's to secure the rebate level before it steps to a lower level, and so we wanted to do that with all your backup material tonight that shows you what the structure would look like. A couple of photos. And their first shot at this was to try and locate them in the parking lots. Now, one thing that became apparent is these structures, unless you're going to put in a modified structure like an L structure, they have to fit on a double-loaded parking aisle for the most part. In the center between two parked cars. And you have to be concerned about fire lanes because the fire department wants like a 17.5-foot high structure, which is probably cost prohibitive. And you have to be concerned about how close you get to a building. So there are a number of constraints about siting these in solely in the parking lot. To that end, we've identified all plausible locations at schools. Some of them are at the party line between the hard court exterior asphalt area and the play lawn area. Some cases it's in a landscaped area. This is the first shot at it. It is by no means the final location for these structures. The next step that we'll take if the board authorizes us to move forward this evening is we're going to meet with each and every site administrator to go over this first straw diagram and get their input, see if there are ideas that they have that would work on their site, see if any of these ideas that we've come up with won't work functionally with them. And this includes long-range planning on the site where future building might take place. Obviously, we want to try and be as wise as possible about where we site these structures. So that's the process we're in right now. You do have a corrected page, a summary sheet corresponding rebate application amount would be forfeit. So if, for example, for some reason we didn't move forward with Monarch Grove, we would have $5,000 at risk that we would lose. Conversely, if we didn't move forward with San Luis High School, it could be $20,000. We don't anticipate there being many instances where we won't move forward, and these are the upper limits. These set the maximum size of the system. If a system comes in slightly under that size, then we might only forfeit a little small portion of the rebate reservation application. So this next step in the process, we're asking the board to authorize us to go ahead and make these applications and commit these funds, which, as I said, would be refundable if we move forward with the projects. This evening, we have Matthew Woods with REC. You will remember Matthew from the last board meeting. And we have Peter Harris, who is going to be the project manager, hands-on guy for our project. And they don't have anything to do but answer any questions that you might have. And I thought that perhaps the board has thought of it a little more. Maybe you have some questions. And other than that, we're just asking for permission to go ahead and make these applications.
Okay, Mr. Millar.
Brad, is there going to be resistance from either the cities or county planning regarding these structures?
You know, we checked with city planning, city of San Luis Obispo, and we checked with county planning, and nobody has any knowledge of any resistance. Okay. Plus, they're not the permitting agency. Division of State Architect is. Yeah. That said, with the exception of the Corporation Yard at on Southwood, drill goal, you know, the standard. Yeah. I think it's probably more a question of functionality, and is it going to either enhance or diminish the playground's functionality? You know, there are instances we're trying to get a secondary usage out of the structure for provides a certain amount of cover for waiting for pickup, for example, or maybe even in an ag area where they need a covered area. And I don't know what ideas the principals might have when they get an opportunity to think about it. Their school, their locations, they might come up with ideas that we, and I expect they will, come up with ideas that we haven't thought of, where we might even be able to maximize the benefit.
Thank you.
Mr. Unger?
Yeah, in my world, one harebrained thought I had was we have lunch areas that aren't covered, and it might be nice to be able to look at that as providing additional shade and rain protection for our students. And so there's something, you know, when you talk to the principals, it would be interesting to hear what they have to say.
That is a good idea. Like that. That has come up in the past. I know that Pacheco is interested in some covering for outdoor eating, and that we've actually cited as a possible location an area I had a previous discussion with the principal that might work for Pacheco. And, you know, I'm hoping that lots of ideas like that will come forth from the principals and that they'll be doable.
Mr. Buckman.
Thank you. I do have several questions, Madam President. If you want me, I can spread them out, or I can do them all at the same time. First of all, I'm wondering, and I didn't participate in the discussion last time on purpose, but now that we went. Okay, sorry.
It's on San Luis High. Yeah,
that must be where I fell asleep last.
And this is under the San Luis High meter. This whole complex is off of the San Luis High electric meter, so it's on the San Luis High School page. That's probably why you didn't see it separated out.
Okay. Secondly, when I look at a school like Hawthorne that probably has less than an acre of playground, and the location doesn't seem like it would enhance pickup, I'm wondering whether we're just taking away too much playground space. If there's posts there, it's going to sort of interfere. I mean, there's just not a lot of place for kids to get exercise,
run around.
Well,
that's a good question, and we're going to take every opportunity to explore that with the site principal and any staff members that he would like to bring into the discussion so that, you know, the last thing we want to do is put something up that's going to degrade the operations of the school.
Okay. And just if you can give us some perspective on this, if this were to be a new school and it was to be sited, the state has some requirements for acreage for an elementary school. Can you just give us a sort of?
They have what are called thumbnail guidelines, and they're not requirements because there are many schools that are, especially in urban areas, that are much smaller than their guidelines would say. Hawthorne was originally master planned to be a 550-student school. That was pre-20-to-1. It's effectively now more like a 350-400-student school the way it's operated. I think that the guidelines would be in the 9 to 10 acre size for a 450-student school. And Hawthorne, if memory serves me, is on 5.5 acres.
We were looking at the possibility of roof mounts.
We were, and we still might. What we're doing, though, is we're trying to maximize the cost effectiveness of the installations in order to get the very best possible PPA rate and maximize the savings over time. As we move forward, if we decide that, okay, this roof really makes sense, we want to go through it, then we may come back and say, for this section of this project, because it's a more expensive installation, the PPA rate's going to have to be adjusted, in which case we'd have to come back and discuss it.
Okay.
And similarly, if on a particular school we find that we, instead of T-type structures, we need to do L-type structures and T-type structures and not go in the playground, there are going to be cost impacts. And those will be, quote-unquote, adders. And we'll have to discuss how that affects the PPA electric rate in the long-term perspective. And there would be effects. So the first pass is to do it in the most cost-effective manner.
Okay,
and then we'll look at those things that might cost a little bit more.
as we go along. But at this point, am I correct in what I see is that the only roof mount is at the corporation yard?
Yes, and that's because they don't have to go to DSA for that one. And it's very easy to go through the city and get permitted, and much more costly to go through DSA.
Okay, thank you. And I would note that Rec Solar is looking much more casual tonight and relaxed than they did when last we saw them. Any other questions? Okay, then do we need a motion on this?
Just direction,
Brian? I think a motion. You're authorizing it.
I beg your pardon.
No, there's
Mr.
a motion. I'd just like to. Even though the amounts that we have to put up for our application are relatively modest overall, did I understand that sequentially we're going to make the application, then we're going to go to the principals?
Yes.
Okay. Should we go to? Oh, that's right, because we're at a timeline to reserve our place. Okay. In that case, and in view of the fact that the money is relatively modest, that we might end up having to forfeit, I think that's a good idea.
Well, and let me amend my answer, because the application's not ready to be mailed tomorrow, and I want to start scheduling meetings with principals tomorrow. So those schools where perhaps we have some of the most questions, I'll try and schedule those first, get some feedback. But if you pick, one small school, and, you mentioned Hawthorne, the application at risk for Hawthorne is $2,500. So it's not whether it goes in the exact locations that we've depicted here. It's just whether or not we build a system of that size at Hawthorne in some fashion.
Thank you.
But we want to get in on this tier.
I do.
Okay. Any other questions, or we have the motion on the table? Okay. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That passes unanimously.
Thank you.
Item 8 is clarification on whether to agendize board-suggested topic, scheduled visits with public officials, and key communicators publication. Dr. Valentine.
Very briefly, lingers as a question as to whether the board still wants to have a discussion of it during a meeting.
Open for board discussion. Mr. Millar.
Well, I'm content to see what the superintendent brings forward as far as the communication plan that we discussed during the evaluation process.
Mr. Buckman.
I too, think at this point this is an administrative decision to see how that they can implement this goal.
Mr. Unger.
Yeah, that works for me. I'm assuming then that this is a different topic than the possibility of us meeting with other public officials to discuss matters of mutual interest.
It's a different topic.
Okay, great.
Yeah. Okay, well, I think that it has been discussed. Dr. Valentine, the board.
So the way this is worded is absent a motion, it would not come forward.
We are absent. Okay. So then we move on to the action consent agenda. Please let me know if you'd like any of these items pulled. Item 9, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. Item 10, acceptance of donations. Item 11, approval of purchase orders. Item 12, approval of warrants and payroll.
The only reason that it has to be pulled is because I have to abstain. I have a hardworking family member that keeps showing up.
Okay.
Sorry.
Item 13, destruction of Class 3 disposable records. Mr. Spadafor, you pulled item 13. I beg your pardon.
It was item 12, only for the purpose of abstaining.
Okay, so
not for the purpose of drawing it out any further.
I move approval of item number 12.
Okay, we have a motion by Mr. Unger, a second by Mr. Millar. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So we have 6 in favor and 1 abstention. Advance agenda. anyone have anything that they would like to discuss in that regard? Seeing no one, move on to reports by board members.
If I may, Madam Yes. President, I have a very long matter and detailed item that I'd like to discuss. I could have done this at the correspondence to the board, but I did want to mention I received a card from the organization known as Altrusa, and they are putting on an event, a play called The Clean House. Well, they're supporting it, yeah. They're not doing it themselves, but they're supporting it at Little Theater on August 27th, 2009. Hors d'oeuvres at 7, wine at 8 o'clock. Seating is $25. The play is called The Clean House, a warm-hearted comedy written by Sarah Rule. Altrusa has supported the reading programs at Hawthorne School for quite a while and do a wonderful job. And the card I received was thanking for the support, but also saying how much they've enjoyed the relationship they have with the principal, Kurt Collins.
And Kathy and I are hopeful of attending.
Mr. Unger.
Well, I just, first of all, I wanted to, as the board knows, on July, I believe it was 17th, I was able to attend the City, County, and School Summit in Sacramento. And I appreciate the board's support for that. And I just wanted to bring back a little report from that. I did get some written information that I'd like to share with all of you, and I've asked Mrs. Holmes if it would be possible for her to get that. I think the things that I'd like to just let everybody know that were major topics of discussion, first of all, there's a lot of interest in a constitutional convention, and there'll continue to be a lot of talk about that. There are two groups that are really looking at that, California Forward and the Bay Area Coalition. We're going to be hearing a lot more about that. Actually, we're starting to hear a lot about that. I believe it was, what's today, Tuesday, Sunday, the Los Angeles Times came out with an editorial supporting a constitutional convention, essentially saying that the system is so broke it can't be fixed any other way. There was strong support for local control. Cities and counties really have an interest in keeping local money local. And that, I think, partially was driven by what they call Proposition 1A, which said that local money would stay local unless the state government wanted to borrow it. And then if they borrowed it, they could borrow it with interest and not have to pay it back for 3 years. Well, the cities and counties, especially I believe counties, are really, really suffering through the economic recession, even though we know for most revenue limit school districts, the money goes to the state first. The state takes what they'd like to, and then they give it back to the schools. So we really don't have any local property tax authority other than if we want to get bonds or if we want to be able to pass a parcel tax. The bar is, as we know from our experience, I believe it was in 2002, the bar for passing a parcel tax is very high. And so for schools, I believe our interest is being able to raise money locally and then keep it locally. And I believe for cities and counties, it's to actually keep the money locally. Some statistics that were presented to us were that the percentage, and this will be in the written data information that you guys get, the percentage of trust that the citizens of California have for the state is at an all-time low, not only the legislature, but, of course, the governor and really all of the state functions. The local governments, it's well over 50%, in that 50% area at least, for trust in being able to take care of folks locally. In our area, we do share a lot of community resources, the police department, mental health, planning commissions, we have a lot of interests, and so I think it's going to be very important for us to continue to work with our local partners. At the meeting with me, it was nice to see Bruce Gibson was there from the county, John Ashbaugh, Andrew Carter, and Alan Settle, all from the city of San Diego, with our local community governments. And work toward that local control, because we're certainly not getting it from the state. And especially as we look at a constitutional convention, what is it going to mean to us? What's it going to mean to the schools? I think these are really key points, and I think that we need to be players, and as they say, we need to get on the bus for this stuff. So as this comes forward, I would ask for support from the rest of the board.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, so if we have no further board reports, we are adjourned.